That's another time in the story.
Oh, my Rocky Mountain chocolate, look at that. Dawn, above or below par, you are awesome. Thank you very much, that's awesome.
Okay, Stephen, are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. Over to Stephen.
So, hello everyone. As you know, I'm Stephen Downs, National Research Council of Canada, trained and educated as a philosopher, if you couldn't tell. as mentioned, I've worked in the field for a long time. Really got my start at Assiniboine Community College, for which I'm forever thankful. And I built their first website, and I built a learning management system for them, and that got me off on my career. Louder? Okay. So one of the things that I did for Assiniboine, because I was sitting there in my little cubicle programming like crazy, the president one day came in, said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm putting the little edge on this button here." And he sort of laughed. So they asked me, "What are you doing?" And I couldn't explain it in 5 minutes, so I wrote a paper called "The Future of Online Learning." This was in 1998, and gave it to them, and posted it on my website. And that's kind of where my real career began, was with that paper. It's now almost 20 years later. Pretty much everything in the paper has come true, and I'm proud to say I even got the name of the iPad right in 1998. So I've become known not simply as a philosopher or a technologist, but also as a futurist. And that's, you know, so my expertise lies in those areas. My expertise is not in giving a workshop, but we'll try, and as mentioned, it's a bit of an experiment. This workshop is based on a workshop that I've run a number of times called Designing Your Own Personal Learning Environment. But with this group, we figure people want to think bigger. So what we're up to here is designing the future institution. Now, I'm not sure if you can read this slide from the back. How does it look to you?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Kind of broke the rule where it says, you know, more than 8 lines, and I went for about 10. So I knew I was pushing it. Live dangerously.
Yeah.
So this is a design exercise. Imagine we're starting now, and we're building our system. And imagine we know what we will know during the course of this session about where things are headed, and plus all of your background knowledge and experience, an essential element of this workshop. How would we design the system? Would we design it the same way, different ways? What would we do? That's what we're up to here. So, this is not a simple topic. And it's not one where we're going to be able to meet in our groups of four and come up with a consensus and then come up with a room consensus, because if I have anything to say about the future, it's this. That's not what the future will be like. In the past, we were driven by agreement, consensus, uniformity, etc. But in the future, I don't want to say we're splintering or fragmenting, because that's not quite accurate, but we're not consensus-driven anymore. We're, if you will, network-driven. And that's a different dynamic. And I could sit here and try to explain that for 3 hours, and we'd all glaze over. Or we can experiment with it, play with it, actually put things in our hands, and try to feel what that's like. And that's what we're doing here. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't work. But I figure I've got a room full of willing participants who would like to see it work. I hope. So we'll go with that. So the idea here is each of you throughout this retains your own perspective. You're not required at all to come to an agreement, to make accommodations, etc. Stick to your point of view. Your point of view is valuable and necessary and a part of the input. The output of the workshop is not a joint statement or anything like that. It's something that will emerge, and I'll talk about that, from the overall process. And it's not simple. It's not going to be something we can write down in words, a message we can take home. It's complex. And it's complex in a way that each of you, when you look at it, will see something slightly different. Because that, too, is the way of the future. So far, so good? Sound like fun? Okay. So we've already blown the schedule.
So,
it's
our fault.
It's your fault. So, but this is roughly what we'll do. We'll adapt, because if there's another rule of the future, it's to adapt. Douglas Rushkoff says that being able to work with new technology and in the future is like riding a wave, right? And riding the wave is not about learning all about the wave. Riding the wave is adapting in the moment. So we'll adapt in the moment. So, drivers and attractors, just a quick set up the frame. Stakeholders and benefits, I know you'll love talking about that. Affordances, break, where I hope there will be coffee.
Yeah.
Yay. impact, services and trends, and then finally the capstone exercise, designing the future institution. That's a rough timeline. There you go. Just one note about process and all of that. Well, a couple notes because I can't count. First of all, this workshop is for you, not for me. So if you don't like where it's going, tell me. If you do like where it's going, you can tell me too. That's okay. If you want to change where it's going, tell me. I'm in your hands, right, as a group. And so if you feel it's not working for you or you want to go off on a tangent or whatever, fine. I'm not locked into anything. But, you know, it'll be the room as a whole that decides. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, again, this workshop's for you. Don't feel that you have to sit and listen. If you want to ask a question, make a comment, vehemently denounce me, never mind, feel free. And the best part of my workshops, if you want to leave, you can always leave. I'm just kidding. But many people think that that's true. So it's about you, what you guys are getting from this, and so let's make it work for you. For me, it's an experiment with humans. No. All right. Just, you've probably heard the terminology, etc. before. So this is basically to set a framework or a structure. So we don't need to be, I'm always in your way in front of the screen, aren't I? I do that. I take up.
You're moving enough that I catch.
Okay, good.
No problem.
So this is a framework that I work with, lots of people work with, the idea of drivers and attractors. I'm sure, no doubt, you've been through dozens of workshops with various consultants talking about this driver, that driver, etc. All we're doing here is setting a structure, background, or framework for the real work that we'll be doing in talking about future trends and future developments. But we need to do this. And what I want you to think about, I want you to think about both the drivers and the attractors of your institution and of the system as a whole. The drivers are the external things, costs, events, crises, inventions, growth, whatever. You're not limited to this list at all. In fact, you'll be tasked in a few moments to exercise your own imagination about what the key drivers might be. What's really interesting about drivers is they don't push us in any particular direction. They definitely push us, but you know, they might push us toward liberalism, conservatism, communism, who knows, right? To embrace tech, to avoid tech, to unionize, to break unions, whatever, right? That's the problem with drivers. And so many people talk about drivers as though they determine something, but it's not true. And you know it's not true. Sure, there's computers coming into the classroom. That doesn't tell you what you must do. Equally important, more important in many ways, are the attractors. I'm using that word because we all kind of have a sense of what it means, right? It attracts, it brings you towards something. Values, goals, desires, needs, etc. I'm also using it in a bit of a technical sense because all of this is a chaotic system. And in a chaotic system, momentum, trends, etc. are drawn toward attractors. The attractor doesn't dictate the final state. It's not where you're going to end up, but it's where the flow is leading you. The problem with attractors is they move. Sometimes they move randomly, and in which case they're called strange attractors. But we're not going to worry about that. What we're going to worry here about is the idea that the overall complex network of people, institutions, stakeholders, whatever, is going to lead you towards some values, goals, objectives, etc. So that's the framework. Straightforward enough? Okay. So now we're going to have activities. This is going to be generally how we do this through the whole thing, right? We have a bit of concept and then a bit of activity. For each of the sections, there's some discussion of the concept, and then you do stuff. There's a couple of reasons for that. First reason is you do not want me to talk for 3 hours. Second reason for that is I do not want to talk for 3 hours. But also, it's to get you thinking about these things and thinking with your hands as well as your minds. Because, you know, it engages a bit more. So, I have presents. So, first of all, look at the core question. What is driving change in our field? And what are the attractors in our field? Ask yourself, what are those? And then we're going to, well, you've naturally grouped in groups of two, except for the table of five. We've got two tables of five, so you'll have to bridge. So, groups of two, discuss for a few minutes, and then select one driver and one attractor. Now, what we're going to do is place them, I need a big wall somewhere.
Is that big enough out there to keep them or no?
Maybe. I was looking enviously at that back wall. Could you?
Yeah.
Because that back wall might be big enough.
Because I brought not little tiny cards, but big cards.
While you're working, I'll be knitting.
Okay.
So here's how smart I am. I did not unwrap my presents before I came in here.
You want to wrap those?
Yeah.
Start the distribution.
And
how many to each person?
Divide them evenly. So maybe just put some on, like a pile on each table.
There's some Sharpies to work with.
You don't have to use the Sharpies, but they'll
be clearer. I brought fewer Sharpies than there are people. I did that deliberately.
So you have to share. And also I'm cheap. Okay. So groups of two. And between the two of you, you pick one driver, one attractor. Now, you're not working all by yourself, right? Here's the challenge of this thing. They're all going to be put up here on our big giant wall, or as I think of it, our big giant brain. We're just going to put them sort of at random. So you know that there are going to be another 10 or so index cards put up there. Do you want the same attractor and driver as everyone else? Maybe. It doesn't matter if you have duplicates. But maybe you want to try to pick an outlier. I don't know. So think about that. So it doesn't matter if there's duplicates. It doesn't matter if they're all different. Doesn't matter what the attractors and drivers are, as long as they're like real.
All right, so we're off to the races.
We're in pairs. Yeah, so the pairs agree on the driver and attractor that you're going to post, and then you post one driver, one attractor for each pair.
Which color is which?
Colors are insignificant.
It doesn't matter what color we're using, right?
No, it doesn't. There's significant, but not in this contract. We'll take about maybe 5 to 7 minutes for this.
I'm going to go to the next one.
Sorry?
Yeah.
But in the next slide, you have some examples.
And we want to be just about wrapping it up.
And you can see who are competitive right now.
Well, more
better or once they get into the institution, they will have better than other competitive institutions. And there's a consequence that they have.
Okay, time.
Should we put where? The driver versus the tractor?
No, doesn't matter where you put them. Thank you.
It doesn't matter which concept is comprehensive or more specific.
Literally anywhere, you can already stand and move them around with yourself.
We're smart enough that can defend them anywhere. We're not fighting. It's the same choice.
One last day of the holding out. So I can tell I'm dealing with presidents and administrators because I said put them up running their money. He began by putting four of them in a line. And then he began to work down. So I'm just going to write it down.
Yeah,
I'm going to
Just
want to scatter them out a bit.
Yes,
I turned it right side up. I see. Okay, so what do we got? We got more? Oh, do you want me?
Yeah, I have a great.
That doesn't look like it was counting the one that well. Learner needs application. So, yeah, there's always somebody who tries to squeeze four or five things in when I say one.
Change the font.
Change the font, yeah. Your three-page paper, 72-point font. So, globalization, approach to learning, personalization, diversity, rate of change, financing, connectivité, institutional culture, competitive advantage, different learners, this list, differentiation, technology, economy, they're all different. How about that? It's interesting because you didn't know what each other was doing. Yeah, they're all different. It's, what's also interesting, and I'm only noticing this now, it's a, depending on your point of view, whether it's a driver or a tractor, changes.
Yeah.
Right? Diversity might be a value or it might be something that's done to us. Financing, right? Enrich society, approach to learning, personalization. That's a great one, right? Is that a driver or an attractor? Already we have something interesting that we've discovered. Well, when I say we, I mean me. But
anybody else notice anything interesting there?
All of it's future looking.
All of it's future looking, that's a good point. Does it seem right? I'm asking these questions genuinely. There isn't a right answer to them. Does it feel right? Does that kind of capture the field, do you think?
Feels like reality.
Feels like reality, yeah. All right, I'm just going to grab a snapshot of this.
Because usually when I do these workshops, I forget to record them.
I'll do it and I'll send it. Oh, no, you have it back.
Oh, I got it. But yeah, definitely take back that photo for sure. Absolutely. Because you never know.
Hard to read, but there it is.
But I think one more point that I want to make is it's a difficult choice.
Yeah.
That it's not one. It's not just one. It's a more complex process that's happening.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And it's quite chaotic right now.
Absolutely. It's chaotic. It's complex. It's not just one. That's why I did it this way, right? And we didn't sit down and agree on what are the five most important drivers. We might have come out with five drivers. We might have come out with them all the same. Who knows, right? To me, it's really interesting that they're all different. That was an unexpected result. I thought my next step would be, okay, well, I'll use my yarn and connect the ones that are the same. None of them are the same.
So, but I wanted to force you to pick one, because I wanted you each to pick the one that is, I would say, the most salient. Not the most important, not the most significant, not the most popular, but the one that is the brightest in your mind. So I went after that. And then that's what we got. Rate of change of technology, but that is interesting. But one of the bunch, yeah. Now for some fun, and who knows what we'll get after drivers, stakeholders and benefits. So. You've been through your leadership training probably numerous times. You know what I'm talking about when I talk about stakeholders and benefits, right? So the stakeholders are who we serve. And again, that's a complex question, isn't it? And we know, and that's why we say stakeholders instead of, say, customers or clients or funders or managers or whatever, because there are different types of individuals or groups out there with different roles. It's not simple either. For example, we say government is a stakeholder. I work with government. Does that make me your stakeholder? Well, maybe. Right. There are 250,000 federal public servants. So when you say government, that's 250,000 people. Do you mean the dictates of the minister? Do you mean policy directives coming from the department, etc.? Right. Similarly with students. Students, as you know, aren't just, you know, 18 to 25-year-old first year of high school, especially in your domain, but increasingly across the board. I started university 5 years after leaving high school. I started college 1 year after leaving high school and lasted 1 year. And it wasn't the fault of the college. I became broke. It was Algonquin College that I went to. I took a computer science program. I took electricity and engineering and mathematics on one computer course in a year of studies. And on the strength of that course, I moved to Alberta and got a job with a company called Geophysical Services Incorporated, a division of Texas Industries. And they finished my, well, they continued my computer training. I took some night courses, too, at SAIT in Calgary. So that's where I learned Fortran. So thank you, SAIT. Algonquin, you taught me Pascal. And punch cards. I did punch cards. So, all right, never mind.
You're still doing punch cards, aren't you?
Burn.
There goes that Saskatchewan, Ontario line.
Yeah.
So we can be pretty specific or pretty general with stakeholders, whatever you think is appropriate. The benefit now is the good that is produced, right? Not the product in particular, but the value that is produced. And that's really important to distinguish between the thing that comes out of, if you were a factory, the widgets or whatever, and the value that these widgets create. And there's a whole, and you've probably gone through these sessions where they say, the one about Xerox didn't know that they were in the reproduction business, or they were in the information business, not the reproduction business, or Ford didn't know that they were in the transportation business, not the truck business. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm after here. What is the value? Right? What is the benefit? This value might be jobs, growth, prosperity. It's an attractor in a sense, but it's an attractor that's going to be specific to our stakeholder. So they're going to come in a pair, right? So a stakeholder and the value that is produced for that stakeholder. And now you get a sense of the challenge that you're going to be faced. And we're going to do similar to what we just did. So similar sort of activity. Groups of two, you can use the same groups of two, or if you were a dysfunctional group of two, you can change. So, just like before, okay? So, for each of your groups, select one stakeholder and one benefit, and the benefit needs to accrue to that stakeholder. And then we'll take those and put them on that wall. And then after that, we're going to think about what we've put up on the wall and see if we can draw any connections between them. Sound good? Comments, questions?
We're using the same color cards.
The same or different, doesn't matter.
We're making a big chaotic jumble.
AKA a brain. All right, 5 minutes. Because I'm still trying to catch up to time.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is interesting. We got students, and we got that several times in both English and French. We got employees. I saw once at least, and maybe twice. So what we're going to do, we're going to start building our brain. So one of the first principles of association is something called Hebbian association, named after the Canadian psychologist Daniel O. Hebb. And basically the principle is what fires together, wires together. It's kind of like saying, you know, birds of a feather flock together. In the brain, if two neurons fire at the same time and don't fire at the same time, they will form a connection between them. That principle also works in modern artificial intelligence as well. For example, there's an algorithm called K-nearest neighbors, which looks at the features of two things and draws a connection between them if they're similar. This resembles a brain the way a rock might resemble Michael Jordan, but it's close enough. So let's do a little Hebbian connectionism. So for example, we've got students. So here's students, and let's wire it together. And yes, I brought scissors because I was afraid, and I'm still afraid that I'll run out of thread, but we'll see. Actually, not thread, yarn. I like the yarn stretchy. So we have students. Also, way down at the far end, so. Good. One of my first connections is one that's going to run the full length of the board. So yeah, okay. Come on, yarn.
So I always wanted to be a string guy in my next career. Can I help you?
You can.
Stringer.
String guy.
You're a stringer.
A string guy. I can make a string.
He's
on fire today.
We might need to support it properly. So there's something that doesn't happen in brain.
We can fix that too.
Yeah, that's true. There you go.
See? Good helps my brain.
That's my brain. A real So, okay, we got more students here to connect.
Learners. Different learners.
Different learners would count as well.
And you have different learners there, okay. And you have lifelong learners.
And yeah, so
you have it here too.
Yeah,
but it's not the same thing.
It's not.
Lifelong learners is not the same as students.
Well, this is the thing, right? Is it close enough?
Why isn't that clear?
To associate?
It's a concept.
Same family. In genetic, you would say it's
the same. The ones of whom I mentioned is
correct. That's correct.
Kind of a hard decision.
decision, right? That's the kind of decision your brain makes all the time. You don't even think about it, right? Remember Sesame Street, right? Here are some things that belong together. One of these things is not the same. That's what they're training you to do, is this whole associative thing. The HEDR is here. And again, it's not exactly the same because we have savoir source de liberté. So not exactly, but close enough. So I'm going to leave this task to you guys, which we'll do over time. Maybe I should
take your day job.
Yeah. So, we also have employees.
Yes, that's what I'm
saying. I'm saying the coincidence of the fact, and it totally is coincidence, that the string goes over lifelong learners will be enough to connect you. So, just stick a piece of tape on it. Oh, well, that'll do too. So, note for future record, a faster way. This is just, I couldn't find anything like sticky bread.
Lifelong learning or learners.
It doesn't matter if you can have a sensitive learner, probably.
Is it a hill?
I think this is going to matter.
I said, is it a hill?
Maybe you can get a couple other volunteers to connect employees together. And we've got one here, and I thought I saw another one somewhere. Maybe I can. Oh, still employees, so we need something to connect these two.
You should have different
colors. Same color.
Oh, doesn't matter. Well, that's not true. There are actually 10,000 distinct types of neurons, but for our purposes, a neuron is a neuron.
I'll second that.
So, now, having a look at this, I know it's hard if you're in the back. Do you see any other things that ought to be connected? Anything, things that are similar? Opportunity, globalization, finance,
job rate,
personalization,
everything is connected to everything.
Yeah, so that's worth coming.
Individual.
Yeah, go for it. That's the thing with these networks. There's no one person in charge. You know, there's this popular fiction that there's what they call a homunculus in the brain giving instructions, right? But are there homunculi here? Really? No. It could be anybody doing this. Could be any of you putting up a connection. If I wanted to have a lot of fun, I'd have you either put up connections or tape them down. That's one variation, but I won't do that. So, and if I had, I don't know, 2-3 days to do this workshop, what I would do is I'd give you each your own color for your own things, right? You put them up, and then the connections have to be negotiated between the two of you, right? So somebody put up students, somebody else in a different color put up students. So you agree, yeah, we're the same, let's draw a connection, right? And so the interesting edge cases, like, you know, lifelong learners, is it the same as students? Well, the person who put up this card and the person who put up this card, they ask themselves, do we agree? And if you agree, we'll put up the connection. You know, based on similarity. Similarity is just one principle, and that's what we're using for now. That would be fun, but that would take a long time. All right.
So far, so good?
Yes. So far, so good.
Okay. Let's wonder what we can do to this now. If any of you see a connection that you think should be drawn, feel free to connect it.
All right. You notice I made the slide before I bought the yarn. Okay. This is the third and final concept before the break, I think. No, I'm pretty sure it is. Affordances. I think you're familiar, Ron. I'm working with a bunch of predators. I know you're familiar with the concept of affordances. How is the time?
We're good.
Okay, cool. So an affordance basically is what you can do with a thing, right? So the affordances of this device, I can make telephone calls, I can take pictures, etc. But even more to the point, I can keep in touch with my wife, who's wandering out here somewhere, spending, because, no, we agreed, it's okay, and I can, you know, check the time, so the affordances, I can know whether or not I'm ahead of schedule. Now, affordances aren't just things you can do, right? Affordances are the things you're capable of if you have this thing. It's more modal, it's more broad. And that's important because often, all the time, the affordances of something exceed the original design intent. And the best example of that is the internet itself. I like to think of the internet, you know, I think about it a lot. Trillions of dollars worth of technology, right? The most advanced technology in the history of humanity. Thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of miles of cable, fiber optic technology, flat screen displays, and, you know, TCP/IP, HTML, etc. Wonders of technology. And we use it most of all, more than anything else, to send cat pictures to each other. Right? So, what does that tell you? Yeah. So, think broadly when you think of affordances, right? Don't just, you know, and so, now, the core question here, and this is kind of a focus for this workshop. We could have taken different focuses, but you have me, so we'll take this focus. So how is our technological environment changing? If you want to focus on other kinds of change as well, that's cool. You guys are a brain, after all. Each of you is an independent, autonomous individual capable of coming up with your own important things. But I'll look at technology. How is technology changing? Bandwidth is, and for that matter, computer power, have been for the last half a century and continue to be governed by something called Moore's Law. Right? Basically, the doubling of bandwidth or processing power in 18 months. And it's been pretty consistent. And there's no sign of it stopping. So if you look at bandwidth, for example, you know, went from 2G, 3G, et cetera. Well, we didn't have any G to start with. iPhone only came out 10 years ago. Now I've got LTE on this thing, and the technology consortia are just wrapping up the specifications for 5G. Yay! So we're looking basically at wireless broadband. You know, wireless, I can watch my baseball game. Wireless, I can do an immersive simulation, whatever, right? And desktop bandwidth is already through the roof, unless you live in the country, right? I live in Castleman, which is a small town between Montreal and Ottawa, so I don't have fiber optics, boo-hiss. When I was in Moncton, I did. It was wonderful. So affordances aren't equally distributed either, as science fiction author Gibson. Anyhow, I can't remember his first name. I'm confusing it with Bruce Sterling, that's why. William Gibson. All right, that's better. So, computing power, same thing. Couple of things really important here with computing power. Again, it's continuing to increase. Sorry about that. You've all wanted this. Computing power, we're moving into quantum computing, and that's something that we're doing at NRC, for example. We're also moving into, I was just reading yesterday, again in an IEEE thing, about bringing together processing layers and data layers. A lot of the new artificial intelligence work that's being done is being done on graphical processing units, because a GPU, which runs your screen, is a whole bunch of, it's interested in a whole bunch of simultaneous operations, each pixel of your screen, right? That works really well for data processing. It worked better than traditional chips, but now they're working to integrate data and processing into the same environment, which is really interesting. Some of the new materials that are coming along, this integration is being done with carbon nanotubes, for example, and we're seeing a lot of potential in that kind of computing environment. Power storage is the big thing. Power storage is, 10 years from now, we'll probably be using graphene-based power storage for our mobile devices. It's not quite the same as a battery, but it has much greater capacity, and even better, it has much shorter charging times. So the main message is, no matter how amazing you think our devices are now, the devices 10 years from now will be that much more amazing as compared to the devices we had 10 years ago. So there's no sign of it slowing down. All the tech that I see is continuing to lead to this. And once we're done working with physical tech, we'll move to biotech. And things get smaller and faster and even more muddled. Social media, Internet of Things, are about the connections. And that's why I'm drawing strings here. We don't have individual devices anymore. And that's really important. My phone isn't just a standalone computer. My phone is connected with other phones and other devices around the internet. That's what makes my phone capable of doing so much more than it can do now. And this, again, is only going to increase. Right now, for example, I can access Google Maps. Google uses the signals from all of the other phones, the Google users, to come up with real-time traffic reports, which no doubt all of you rely on. I know I do because I live in Ottawa, which is, a human parking lot. Not like Toronto, though. At least it's better than Toronto. So this connection, this degree of connectivity is going to become only more dense. There will be more sources of information to inform our Google Maps. We'll know where people are, we'll know where devices are, we'll know where all the buses are, yay, finally, etc. That's the environment, the tech environment. New interfaces in VR. So there's you've seen a few of these already. You've probably seen the Oculus Rift and Google Cardboard, which are things you put on your face, and then you're in a 3D world, an artificial 3D world. Pretty good. Don't drive with it. Someone's going to do it, right? It's affordances, right? They'll have their Oculus Risk map on, or mask on, and they'll have their phone like that, and they'll be driving. Hey, I'm driving with my phone in a VR. It's all cartoony. Someone's going to do it. And they'll go into the river, or whatever, or, you know. But also, on those same roads, we're going to have automated vehicles. That's the other thing, right? We're talking about Moore's Law. Moore's Law, in terms of programming capacity, is continuing to increase as well. You can't leave that aside. The things that you can do now, bad way of phrasing it, even the things that artificial intelligence can do now are amazing. I ran a thing yesterday using this self-same graphene-based processor, using carbon nanotube-based processor. It was being used to run a virtual nose. So in the picture is like a nice nose up against some meat, right? But, okay, bad picture. But so the artificial nose is, well, it's a nose. Does the same thing our nose does, except probably a lot better. So is your meat bad? Don't sniff it anymore. So you'll check your meat like this. You'll check vegetables like this. If there's carbon monoxide in the air or noxious fumes or whatever, the artificial nose on your phone would detect it long before you do. Find your, you know, people have distinct individual scent, right? Find your wife with your phone using the artificial nose. Okay, maybe not. It's actually kind of creepy, but you know, we would never do that as individuals, but I mean, that's how dogs find each other, and our artificial nose is going to be this strong, right? So, but even more to the point, scheduling traffic, managing aircraft, flying aircraft, landing aircraft, etc., all of this is capable of being done by artificial intelligence. And I have a question for the people who put jobs up there. What jobs? Right. We're talking 10 years, and a lot of this stuff will be online. These, you know, the truck driving industry, many of you train people related to that industry, will be replaced by self-driving trucks. Will be replaced because they're cheaper. They're more reliable. They don't take breaks. And they'll probably be electric, automatically driven trucks. So, you know, the whole oil and gas industry thing is in for a bit of a shakeup. Just as an aside, oil and gas will convert from an industry where we burn its product to an industry where we make things with its product. And because we're no longer burning the product, the stuff we make with it will be that much cheaper. Why not? Doesn't that make sense? And it's going to have to be that, because otherwise we won't have an oil and gas industry. So, you know, it's a variety of things coming into play here. I could go on all day about analytics and what analytics can do. You guys who have learning management systems, which is probably all of you, already know that there are analytics systems that look at how your students are performing in the LMS and make projections about those who are likely to succeed, those who are not likely to succeed. Oh, our brain has forgotten something. A little card fell to the floor. So it's gone. Our brain has forgotten. So, yeah. Now we know how forgetting works. So, think about, I could sit here now and speculate for hours about what this will allow us to do. And, you know, I've made some pretty good guesses in the past. They're kind of guesses, but they're not completely guesses. We have a framework now that we're working from, right? So we know what we've put up here. We know not just what us as individuals have put up here, but also collectively as a network, not as a group, right? So we have that framework to think from. So, final activity before the break, I think. This time you're in groups of four or five. Coincidentally, we have tables of four or five. So that worked out well. I want you to make an inventory among the four of you, so just one inventory, of maybe 10 or so, you can pick the number, key new affordances. Doesn't have to be 10, it can be 9, it can be 5, it can be 12, but just one inventory. And then make a copy of that inventory for each person in the group. Because after the break, we're going to shuffle the groups and you'll bring your inventory with you to the new group. Sound good? All right. So, I will. Back. Oops. That's not what I meant. Silly machine. I used to, most previous presentations I've used PowerPoint, but today I'm using Google Slides so that I could share them. And so I'm a little bit new with the interface. We're experimenting with everything here. All right, so there are the examples. So take maybe 5 or 10 minutes. Don't agonize over it. It's about 10:30 now, so we're getting close to schedule again, which is great. I kind of hustled it up a bit. So take about 10 minutes, come up with your list. Like I say, don't agonize over it, because you'll need to use this list later, and there's still time to argue about it after the break. So over to you. Any comments, questions? All right, it's all yours.
Artificial intelligence. Expired date, Well, I think that's what I should add.
You don't just go eat and mix up, you go and you can order, you can order a bit of meat, I'm going to tell you what you need to do.
Okay, I'm now declaring it coffee time. But don't feel you have to take a break.
Obviously, this will save automation. Robots automation will replace humans. As a consequence, working hours will be reduced to something like that. 5 day work, day to 4 day work, 3 day work. Naturally, the demand for leisure, sports, tourism, and all these virtual services increase.
substantially.
Yes.
Living, yes. Research. In his world, you complete stem cell research and you can replace your eye, whatever.
And I'm working on the hospitals.
One of the famous stem cell scientists is he was a pioneer in stem cell research. He is the first president of the United States. And that was between the stem cells. More than anything else, this will have enormous We have a stem cell bank, and say every 5 years you have a stem cell injection, and then you can be very healthy all the time. And even this will extend your life at least 100 centuries. So get you in I can say in the future once you complete the stem cell injection. More easily than we have
been. Yes.
So,
that
is the question. There is a baby. Whether this baby is a stem cell baby or what is the outside of your body. As a result of the outside body, then there is a baby clone male.
Yes,
and
definitely.
Well, there should be some way to distinguish. But at the moment, every country for years cloning of human beings. But my friend told me, Taiwan Taipei asked me to close this my friend says that it's more easy to clone human beings than clone dogs or other animals. But you should know how to distinguish human clothing and the outside body.
So it's going to lead to a whole area of ethics.
Yeah, good.
Matches say 99%. In the case of outside, that one is matches only 50% for each of your parents. So that's the difference. You cannot match 99%. That's all. Your health. Economy may be very expensive.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Are you ready?
Yeah. So if you're all, I'm paying.
Whatever you have, Mike. Nine.
Education. Well, I heard that.
Yeah, we're focusing more on education. So where's your son living?
There that's been in a coma for 12 years, apparently T-boned by an OPP police car and put into a coma. And so his mom's always been with him saying he's aware, he knows about us. And what this neuroscientist has been finding is when they put the fellow into an EEG and they start asking him questions such as, if it's yes, think about this. If it's no, think about that. And so if it's yes, think about going down the steps of your home. If it's yes, think about, reading a book. And the neuroscientist will point to the brain scan and say, if it's yes, this area will light up. If it's no, this area will light up. And they're now communicating with him. And he's responding, which is just amazing, eh? and one of the questions he said they were horrified to ask was, are you in pain? Yeah, have you been in pain for 12 years? You know, they didn't want to ask. And finally, they approached his mom and said, you know, we do need to ask, are you okay? And they asked, and he came back with no. You know, I kind of spoiled the article for you if you ever read it. Man. Wonderful article.
It's okay.
But it made me think, you know, we're not far from, I believe, our ability to communicate using our neural senses so that if I'm running or riding or driving and I want to communicate to Stephen and say, Stephen, I really enjoyed your presentation. It was awesome. Can I get a couple references from you?
Yeah.
I can think that and it'll come out in a text and then I'll think send. And God, I hope there's going to be a think send because...
Yeah, you don't want it to just come out.
Exactly. And away it'll go, you know, and I want... I wonder if, because of the brain research we've been doing, that we're far off from that. You know, that kind of thinking and communicating that is not oral, that is not texting, that is not written. You know, it's just thinking, and we put it into our little storage box, and then we say, okay, send that now.
I think we're close. Well, 20 years.
Right, 24 years or something.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, the scope of human history, close.
Close, exactly.
Yeah, it's hard because like it needs to tap into not our cognitive processes, because those are sub-symbolic,
yeah,
but our perceptual processes.
Yeah, yeah.
So it would be like hear ourselves think.
Yeah, yeah. And hugely specific aspects to the brain that we're still a long ways away from. I mean, we're gaining knowledge about their brain incredibly, largely because of the technology and the EEG scans and what have you. But we're still a long ways away of determining what part of the brain is memory, what part of the brain is intuition, you know, that sort of thing. But it does lead us to think, you know, in 40, 60 years, once we do get the specifics down, we may not need a lie detector anymore. We can go into a person's brain and start to say, are they lying or are they being truthful? Lying is over here, and truthfulness is... Yeah, it sure is. It sure is. Yeah. But a lot of this stuff is very intrusive when you really think about it. You know, urine analysis in a urinal to tell you what kind of drugs you need or what have you, you know.
So there's two different approaches here, right? One approach is the system scans your brain, figures out what you're thinking.
Yep.
The other approach is we use mental processes in order to control an external device that does things like send messages.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I think the latter is much more likely.
I think you're right too, yes.
And the latter, that means all the communications to be intentional, there's reading brain states. That would be incredibly unreliable anyway.
Yeah. And I think when that happens, initially it'll be very rudimentary.
Oh, yeah.
But then it'll move along very quickly, and it'll all be predicated upon our knowledge of the brain and our evolving knowledge of the brain.
And we're already at the rudimentary stage. I think it's just described the fact.
So that's for
Thank
you.
You so much.
You're welcome, and this is for you.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Good. Well, during your presentation.
Great, thanks.
Denise.
I saw you recited the End of University book. George Siemens?
George Siemens, yeah.
Now they attribute the book to the University of Manitoba.
So, well, the attribution should be to George and myself and to a degree to Cornier. The first book was, in fact, hosted by the University of Manitoba.
Ah, okay.
Right? Yeah, we offered it over there. Yeah, they actually had a small cohort of certificate students in the MOOC with us.
Yeah.
So and they got their credit for it. And of course, they got much larger.
Yeah.
So, that's fundamentally correct.
Okay. That was by the Lyon University, which is also a good place to do philosophy science. The Church of
Manitoba,
the Church of at the time, they were fantastic.
Good stuff. A lot of the influence of what I did.
Enjoyed this.
Oh, good.
So you do kind of your choice to work for NFC as well?
Yeah, some. Yeah, my work with NRC is really varied, right? Everything from evaluating funding proposals to doing project work. I did a study at the Canada School of Public Service recently. I write software for this. Yeah, it's a wide range of stuff.
Great.
It's so much fun.
La passion de la vie de cette personne est d'améliorer la qualité de vie dans leur communauté. Mon ami travaille avec des offices provinciaux, des politiques sociales et de l'alphabetisation. So I'll say that again in English for my English friends. I think my secret friend is a very impressive person. Their life passion is to enhance the quality of life in their community, and they are on provincial boards for social policy and literacy. Any guesses? We'll move on to layer two. So la meilleure décision unique dans la vie de cette personne a été d'adopter un enfant. This person's single best decision in their life has been to adopt a child. So that's something I think a few of us in this room have a commonality with this individual. Mm-hmm.
Who is it?
Any guesses?
Yes.
Okay, Brian's identified.
Leanne?
Very good.
All right.
She is a very impressive person. She's also received the Order of Francophones of America. She has a master's in education, a baccalaureate in social service, and is presently working on a doctorate at Simon Fraser University. And she's also recently become the chair of CIC.
Yeah. Marvelous.
I wasn't aware I had to bring a gift, so I had to shop Liam when I come here. And I bought something that I hope allows you to be mindful when you have some spare time.
Ooh,
okay. Massive. Cool. Very nice. Okay.
You have a reveal.
I do. My friend is perhaps a little bit reserved, but has a rare and special level of energy and enthusiasm. Has a master's in linguistics. That's a big word for me. Currently undertaking an MBA. Has taught and led in BC, Quebec, Iqaluit, and the Northwest Territory. My special friend is an explorer. The outdoors makes the person alive. Has visited countless countries. Has crossed continents, including 11,000 kilometers across South America. You're all right. And the last thing I would say is, if you go to the website that has the values define Jose as excellence, integrity, faith français, engagement and cooperation, creativity. Innovation, they all define me marvelously, and for sharing with us. And last thing, I'm lucky enough to be traveling with her back to Ottawa tomorrow morning.
And finally, for this great Paul, and Paul has a rather different twist on our
Oh, man. Actually, mine is.
I'd be giving something away as a present. So.
Are they here? Are they entirely left?
Perhaps.
All right, well, okay, then I'll go on to Henry. Okay. He's here. We'll come back.
No, I didn't do any of this personal stuff, so.
It's hard to believe, Henry.
Imagine that, eh?
Yeah, hard to believe.
Okay. My special friend, is this what I'm saying?
There you go.
It's a very interesting fellow. He's married, has two children, has an incredible impact on innovation in the country. He's a brand new president. He's been a chief information officer, VP academic, and a chief operating officer. VP of Agriculture, an executive director at Novonate, which is an interesting model in technology transfer. Attended Harvard Graduate School of Education. Singularity University, took an executive program. University of Alberta, where he has got an MBA in technology transfer. University of Lethbridge, where he got his bachelor's in, of arts and a bachelor's of education. Extensive experience in business development and innovation. Any ideas?
So that'll be it for now. I just want to confirm how many people we have not revealed their secret friend diary. Well, we'll do most, and then, okay, we'll do most of those at lunch.
Okay,
great.
Thank you.
Okay,
Stephen,
back over to you.
That secret friend is a great idea. I'm going to steal it. Okay. So, now we're getting down to business. A bit more down to the practical side of the institution itself. You have your list of, I forgot what I called them.
Affordances.
Sometimes it takes, I had some coffee, I had a muffin, I need to rev up. So I start very slowly. Okay, so you have all of your affordances. You've got your list of 10 or so. How do these impact the things that you currently work with? Now, I'm interested in this in a special sense. I'm not asking how these change current practice, right? Because that assumes current practice. And I know it exists, and it's a thing, and it's what you guys all have. You all have classrooms, institutions, sports, whatever. I know. But the exercise is, suppose we didn't have any of that, right? So I'm interested in the impact, not on how it changes current practice, but how we would reinterpret current practice in light of these affordances, and in light of the background structure we've already put into place with stakeholders, the attractors, the benefits, etc. So I've picked five things here, fairly standard elements of, you know, a college or institution. We don't need to be limited to this five, but we should be thinking at least about these five. So, first question I ask of any of them as I go through is, does it still exist? So, for example, classrooms. We have our mental picture of classrooms, and of course in a college, a classroom can be anything from, you know, an English classroom with desks to a workshop, a lab, whatever, you know. Even a job site, for that matter. Do these still exist? Do they need to exist given the affordances that you have in your list? Do we want them to still exist given the attractors and the benefits and the drivers, etc.? So that's the kind of question you should be asking. My own experience is that the nature of classrooms has changed quite a bit. Even where we still have classrooms, it's no longer what we might call a single modal experience, you know, one mode of content delivery, instructor talking. Today's classrooms have what they call back channels, whether you like it or not. People are communicating by text message, by Twitter, by whatever. Sometimes they're recording videos and you don't know it. Sometimes they're they're doing whatever, right? So you have that kind of back channel. As well, the tools that we use. People are no longer handwriting their essays on paper and handing them in like that, which is what I was doing when I started university. By the end of my time in university, I was using a computer and printing it out and handing that in. I figure handing in typed work as compared to handwritten work, at least one grade point. And then after 7 years, 8 years, or whatever, of marking student work, one grade point. Because I could read it. Made such a difference in my life, both as a student and as a professor. By the end of my teaching, they were all typed. It was just, you know, and indeed, even while I was still a student, some teachers were requiring that they're typed. Now, you can just hand it in on a stick, or hand it in, you know, or email it or whatever. Or would you even do an assignment anymore? And so that takes us to some of these other things. Cohorts. You're all familiar with cohorts, obviously. But look already at what we have up here. We have differentiation, personalized service, individual personalization, not to mention lifelong learners, étudiants à bras, sources de liberté, etc., right? Do cohorts make sense in the context of that? That's a good question. If they do, what would they look like? Now, related to cohorts, and it's not on the list.
Oh, well.
Learning outcomes or learning objectives. That's really a key question. One of the things I'm known for with my colleagues, George Siemens and Dave Cormier, is creating the first massive open online course. George, by the way, George Siemens, learned his craft of online learning at Red River College. So there's a lot of college influence in contemporary instructional technology. You'd be surprised. Or maybe not, right? So we developed the world's first massive open online course. We decided that we had no learning objectives, which made a lot of sense for us because our attitude was everybody who comes to this course is in this course for a different reason. Some people want to understand the subject, or the subject was a learning theory called connectivism. And we decided to teach a course about connectivism because nobody understood what it meant when we just gave talks. So. Others came because they wanted to be in on something, you know, new and innovative. Others because they wanted to be a part of the community that was working on educational technology. One person came with the specific purpose of criticizing George and myself and calling us techno-communists. I kid you not. So there you go. It's all legitimate, or at least it was in our course. So that leads to questions about content. What would the content be? Organization, structure, etc. And we learned we needed to question every one of these assumptions. As soon as you remove common course objectives from the table, everything else changes. It's funny how it works. You change one thing. So you go from personalization to the impact on course objectives to, oh my. So what about resources then? Does it make sense to use a course textbook when there's no course objective? Does it make sense to use the same textbook for everybody in the course when they're coming from such diverse backgrounds? Etc. Does it make sense to use a textbook in the digital age? Does it make sense to use a textbook people have to pay money for in a world where you can learn anything anything from YouTube, or if not YouTube, Vimeo or Wikipedia or whatever. I sometimes, in some of my talks, have a little game I do, right? Pick something, anything you can think of, I'll find out how to do it on the internet. And nobody has fooled me yet. I've found videos, etc. And I've found lots of interesting things. Assessments. Think about assessment. Right now, we use a very blunt instrument, don't we? Tests, right? If they're really lucky, they get to do a project of some sort. Although they'll probably have to work with the team, so they're kind of stuck there, right? Would we assess people the same way if we had software that could just look at everything they did over the 6 months and assess them automatically? There are essay assessors now which have been evaluated, and I find a reference, but I don't have it, but they've been evaluated against actual assessors. They're more consistent than real-life assessors, which is not surprising, really. And the way they work, most people think that automated essay grading, they look for keywords or phrases or things like that. That's not how they work at all. They work the same way an artificial nose does, right? What we do is we take thousands of essays that people have already graded, professors have already graded, and we give them to the computer. And the computer reads all of those, so they get the data and the grade. Data, grade, data, grade. Thousands and thousands and thousands of them. And what it does is, it's a neural network computer, so it's composed, well, it looks like that, except a gazillion times more complex. But basically, each feature of the essay, it might be each word or whatever, there's different ways of doing it, is a data point. These data points are associated with each other. The computer, looking at all of those essays, builds an internal model. So for each grade, there's a model. This model is a set of connections between the individual neurons in the neural network. And then what it does is, the next essay is presented with, it compares that essay with these models. And using a similarity function, whichever model it's most similar to, that's the grade it gets. So there's no criteria, right? An A is an A. A B is a B. How do you know an A is an A? Because it most resembles other essays that are A's, right? And then any criteria that you come up with after that is an interpretation. And there are different interpretations, and this is what we try to teach people, right? You know, an A essay is going to be written in clear language, right? We assume that this is one of the things that the computer would pick up in some way in its model, but it's not explicitly framed in the model. So that's also how computers can drive, right? You don't give it a bunch of rules. Because you think about how many rules you would need in order to learn how to drive even just from here to Ottawa. Millions of rules, right? Computer's driving down a road. Which rule do I pick? Oh my God, I don't know. Right? It doesn't work like that. It builds a model, and then it compares the situation in front of it to its models and picks the one that's most similar. And it's a massively parallel process. It happens very quickly. It's like, here's the situation, like that. The analogy, good analogy, because you do this, is how your brain works too, right? Is you are walking in a train station to meet your grandmother. Because we're all children in my examples, right? And your grandmother walks through the train station and you recognize her instantly. How did that happen, right? What you see is compared with the models in your head, and they match. They don't match exactly. That's why I don't care about exact matches up there. They're just similar enough that when that's presented in front of you, the thought, oh, my grandmother, becomes salient, becomes significant in your mind. And you go, oh, grandma, instant, because it's a massively parallel process. if we could do that with essays, or, you know, with repairs in machine shop, or, you pick your own examples now, right? Why do we need to grade people anymore? Now, if we don't need to grade people, does that change how we teach people? So think about that. It didn't happen this time, but it's happened before, where I asked, what is it that your institution produces that's of most value? And they came out with credentials. People go to our institutions, I was told, for the credential. Right? Because with the credential, they get a job, etc., etc. Well, what's the role of credentials in this new kind of world? Because this technology that I just talked about that could be used to assess your students isn't just going to be available to you. It's going to be available to anyone. Right? If I'm an employer, I have access to this kind of technology, and I have access to enough examples of the person's work, I can do my own assessment. What does that do to the credential? Pardon? It seems to me it would devalue it, right? I would think. Or maybe it changes it, or I don't know. So, you know, but a lot of, you know, and what does it do? I mean, what does a credential represent? It represents completion, right? But now, is completion even the goal? People criticized MOOCs because so many people dropped out of the MOOC. So we looked at it as, well, they dropped out, they got what they wanted, and they left. And that's okay because they didn't pay anything. So it's not like they were, you know, losing a whole pile of tuition. So no problem. We were happy. You know, they got what they wanted and they left. There's still 2,000 other people, so we're good. So, you know, people say, you know, the biggest crisis in American college today is poor completion rates. I'm not sure that's the biggest crisis. I think in terms of credentials, that's the biggest crisis. But in terms of stakeholders and benefits, etc., is that the biggest crisis? It's not up to me to answer that question. And again, as with all of these questions, there is no one answer. There's a collective model that we'll create in the ideas that we come up with, the relations we draw between them, that maybe fits the situation, maybe fits different situations. It's a complex task. So,
can I just make a quick comment? Here?
Absolutely.
If, let's say, in the future, we are saying the credential is going to be disrupted, because currently the credential is a qualification of the faculty. That here is an employer, he seeks quality, the institution gives a credential which assures that quality. Right? So, if that gets disrupted because there are other mechanisms to assure that quality, then the concept of institution changes to learning and teaching to socialization, because everything else is automatically happening in the society. So then institutions, would you then envisage that they become a socialization place where everything else is happening and they become a platform for that socialization to happen?
That's possible. It's certainly an interpretation that people have had. I'm not 100% convinced that would be all of it, but I think that's a big part of it. I sometimes taught, and this might not be exactly what you mean, but this is where I go with it. I sometimes taught in some of my other talks about what I call the Yale advantage. What is it you buy when you get a Yale degree? Is it the knowledge? Not by anywhere. In fact, I checked because their materials are online. I studied philosophy at the University of Calgary, which has a very good philosophy department, but it's the University of Calgary, right? And I compared it with Yale. Same content, exactly the same textbook. So, and I've compared myself to graduates of Yale. I don't think that they became more educated. So it's not the content. It's not necessarily the quality of the staff. Again, philosophy department at Calgary was excellent. What is it? It's the network, right? It's the socialization. It's the group of people who will help each other. The network of Eli's, or the skull and bones, who will assist each other. So here's a question for you. Is that what you're producing?
And I think if you think about that socialization from the perspective, say, of the Conference Board of Canada list of items that businesses generally seek, the soft skills, you know, the team building, the conflict resolution, the creative thinking, the problem solving, then I think we become very strong around those socialization pieces, because it's hard to teach those individually online through a computer. I think, you know, a lot of that stuff requires a pretty high level of interaction, face-to-face, give and take, and what have you.
But keep in mind your new technological affordances that are coming on school.
Yeah, but there's the whole notion around accreditation of certain professions, right, that have to meet a specific standard, and being able to have an individual accredited versus a program of study, for example, mm-hmm. being accredited provides significant challenges to the accrediting body.
Right. Yeah. What is it to be, you know, even with artificial intelligence, what is a qualified mechanic? It's a good question. So, clearly there are changes afoot, right? We might agree that they will be, you know, have such widespread impact that they actually remove some of these things. They might be of significant impact, so they change our understanding of these things and other things too, content, objectives, etc. Or despite the changes, the things that we're doing now might be so valuable we need to keep doing them. But I caution, if they're so valuable, they'll need to relate to our stakeholders and our benefits, etc. So, getting pushed on one side, pulled on the other side. Sounds like a job, doesn't it? Here's the activity. So we're going to shuffle the groups. I'm sorry, I know you're all comfortable. But we're going to shuffle the groups, and I'm going to do it using a process. So it's not just going to be, you know, pick your other friends. Because I know about socialization and how that works. So bring your inventory of affordances with you. When you get to your new group, you'll pool your affordances. So all the affordances in your group, those are all available to you. And then in your group, and this is where it gets a bit difficult, pick a key change in existing practice. Now, I was thinking one for each of the five, but maybe I'll say one or two key changes, because we're running out of room on our diagram. So one or two key, I don't want to say change either, but, you know, so for example, classrooms replaced by computers, or for example, credentials replaced by artificial noses, or for maybe not that, but you know what I mean? A key change that's going to happen. Put it on an index card. So again, two, three, up to five for the group. And then put them up on the wall. Make sense? All right, here are your new groups. I'm going to count. One, two, three, four, five. 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 One, two. This segment has been sponsored by the letter.
Yeah.
Okay, so
Okay, so let's have the groups 1 and 2 meet at the big tables here.
No, that group doesn't know which
number they are. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. They've got their numbers.
Table 1.
So, I need to finish my property. I'm sorry.
All right. Table 1. Table 2. Table 3. Table 4. Table 5. So I have about 10 minutes for this. No more than that. In fact, woo, less than that. Let's try to make it 5 minutes.
Number one.
You should have more. So
the goal is evident on the
leaders of our institution to hire a little and we got county to fly from.
Somebody lost her number.
Well, that's funny. Yes, 1 of 4 is on each. Yeah, 2 or 3. Yeah. Okay. Or 1 change on each card. Right? Yeah. So your base funding according to the
Asynchronous, real time, it could be So what are we going to say is like, this is a change. Okay, so the change will be classroom. I think the real impact, you guys, is going to be on your health care. So how are we going to do this? Do we write one theme, or what are we going to choose here, folks? Or do we need 1 point on each card? So what are we going to write? Okay, any time.
Where is our plan impact on the
Avatar interacting over reality using real time. Other than this, it was the only time for the great story.
The president.
Anywhere up on the board.
So you want to do one of them?
Progress must be now.
You want one
subject? Well, that's what I have to risk.
And it seems my wife is contributing to the
So what does that connect to? You can come closer if you can't read.
Interesting that we're reading. Oh, I should have moved. Best one yet. I didn't know.
The removal of costumes.
Yeah.
Cheryl, you can have a home
there. I know.
Today, this week, almost.
Sure, absolutely. I can see that.
What's the thing to do?
Yes, yep. Remember, neural...
Was there another one first?
Everybody's connected to everything.
Who said that? TBD.
They need this work as qualifications for social workers to take care of people. Soccer games, but it's going to be fun.
All of the topics.
Exactly.
Maybe because we're all
tech
geeks. So maybe because we're all
okay.
I've talked about the whole session.
Yeah.
Yeah. People see things the same way.
Some people don't.
So some things to notice about process. First of all, it goes faster with different people, with number of different people. If you had only one person doing string like me, it would take, you know, 10 minutes to do all these connections. So I find that interesting. I also find it interesting. We have an instantiation of Marvin Minsky's Society of Mind happening here, because we have stringer agents, we have scotch taper agents, and we have string cutter agents. So I found that interesting.
So we have retired tapers.
We're quality control. We just fly in once a
I wish I had a bigger wall. Because if I had a bigger wall, more of you could be engaged in this at the same time, right? And it's interesting, right? Yeah, I noticed that the people who were engaged in it were very engaged. The people who weren't engaged in it kind of became dormant. Just like our brains.
All right.
We were super.
We're being able to synthesize all of this.
Another thing I noticed, and you see what I'm doing, right? I'm just watching what's happening, and there's a pattern, there's a pattern, there's a pattern. I'm picking patterns of things that I recognize out of what you're doing, which is what makes it really interesting for me. So, like, we started out with Hebbian connections. Did I say Heb earlier or Hess?
Heb.
It should have been Heb.
I said Heb.
Yeah. Good. Sometimes I say Hessian, but no, that's a region in Europe. Yeah. We started with similarity, but our connection forming became more sophisticated as people were drawing the connections. And that's also what happens in these neural networks, right? Similarity is just a foundation to begin with, but now we're looking at causal efficacy. You know, this thing relates to the other. This is sort of similar in that they have the same objective. There's a bunch of different, what we'll call, learning principles that were taking place in our network here. Each time we draw one of these connections, that's a type of learning. And whatever creates those connections, that's a learning principle. So different kinds of association, different kinds of mechanism produce different kinds of knowledge. A little deep learning theory for everyone. So I'm going to take a picture of this.
Oh, I took it. I could send it to you if you want.
Oh, that's okay. I do want you to send it to me. But the other thing, and we can't really replicate it here, but the other thing that the brain does is massive parallel redundancy. And what that means is two people take pictures in case someone's camera fails. I've learned this.
Well, sometimes we call it control freak.
So, I was not able to find explosion icons. We won't do the conflict, but I do like to see if there are any outliers. Because another way that thinking works is a very simple process. Use it or lose it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And you know, that applies in so many ways. So if we're not using
something here, or we'll lose it. So, I find this fascinating. Competitive advantage.
Wow.
It's a cooperative network. We're changing from competition to cooperation. That's local and global. So I find that really interesting. This one didn't get connected to anything. Personalized learning. Yeah, okay. Should have been connected.
Yeah, that's personal biases.
It's because there was more than the two words on this.
Yeah.
Who bothers?
Personalized learning is already up there.
Personalized learning, right? There's a personalized learning, data analytics, pre-trained, post-attendance at college, etc. Right? So this is, I'm not sure what a good analogy for it is. I'll just say brain cloud.
Or maybe professional jealousy.
Professional jealousy.
Here's another outlier, really interesting, especially given all of your positions. Reputation of colleges in Canada. Outlier.
It's because it won't exist
anymore. Well, it's not connected to anything. It's not connected to your values. It's not connected to your benefits, to your stakeholders. Right? So, rate of change, I think this one didn't work just because it was too general. Right? It's not something we can put our finger on.
Can we go back to the reputation of colleges?
Yeah.
Because I'm seeing the reaction in the room, and maybe it's because I'm not in a college that I didn't interpret it that way. I didn't interpret it to mean that colleges will disappear because they don't have a good reputation.
Right.
I took it that the institution doesn't matter anymore. Yeah. So in a way, it's actually validating the colleges because there won't, from the outside, it's always looked like colleges feel like a second cousin or country cousin to universities. And what I actually saw that as a positive because it really doesn't matter because it'll be the learning and the outputs as opposed to whether kids are getting at universities or colleges or whatever. My reaction was the exact opposite.
There you go.
Like you won't have to continue having this constant how do we become the real thing? Because you are the real thing. It really doesn't matter that all of the institutions are the real thing.
So the very same thing is seen as a driver or an attractor.
And you know how I think about that one is, most of us, unless you're an aviation engineer, if you're going on a trip, you put a package together that fits where you want to go, and you select a plane that will get you there, but you don't really think about who makes the plane.
Employers.
Which is interesting.
Where did it go?
The orange one. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Employers. Now, there's a challenge for you. Employers was not connected.
Well, that should be a part of individualized learning. Why not? Because employees are learners.
Oh, yes, they're learners. Yeah. Employers are learners, sure. But are they learners as employers? I don't know.
Well, they are social groups, if you look at it. They're social groups of learners. So
we could have put it with global competition.
Could have put global competition. I'm just calling it as after the process it was unconnected. Brains are like that. They're arbitrary.
No, it's a matter of level or dimension. It is rude. Think of high dimension, and there was such very specific and very low dimension. So
I think that's a good point, right? And again, in a longer process with a more detailed and layered neural network, yeah, it probably gets connected.
And it could it also be that these are the outcomes of all of this activity anyway, because eventually what you get out of it is a value proposition, which will eventually result in institutional reputation, plus which could be called a socialization space, because learning will be socialized and is currently socialized, but in a different way, in a virtual way. And the common threads right now are more pedagogical or courses, and it will become more of interest areas. So what am I interested in doing? That will define my cohort rather than the course that will define my cohort. And hence, the institution will then become connected to that idea of that space. And similarly, employers is also an outcome of all this activity. Mm-hmm. And it could also be that everyone will become an entrepreneur.
Could be, yeah. Are there any more? I'm not cutting you off.
But what's really revealing is the TRC one is not connected to anything.
I didn't even know what TRC stood for.
And
I thought it might be Trump.
Which is supposed to show.
The TRC doesn't connect TRC either, folks. You're right. Despite being talked about yesterday. Yeah. So, despite we have diversity on here somewhere, and yet our collective brain, working in short, in very short term, that's just the importance of taking time for reflection, right? It's in reflection that we draw some of the deeper connections. This was our first glimpse, So.
But what is interesting is that TRC, unfortunately, is often seen on its own.
Yeah.
When in fact, it has to be.
It should be core to this. That's what I was.
Should that be almost the hub?
Yeah. So there's the issue, right?
Well, I think there's another interpretation on that.
Yeah.
And that is that here we are, the leaders of the institutions, right? And we talk about this, and everybody's talking about this, yet when we're actually doing work, it doesn't come up.
Interesting. I'm just going to put these here. They're not gone. Well, they are, but they're here.
Can I share with the team, like, my opinion on that?
Yeah.
It's because we were so excited trying to take and put the strings on, and then all of a sudden the bell rang and we had to stop. But it was here, because we were looking at, well, give you for example, this one here. I noticed at one point there seemed to be so much traffic in there, and I said, oh my God, it's not even connected anywhere. And you don't see it because it's right behind. And that's when I said to Denise, well, what about this one? Like, we always see self-realization for students. And so we looked at it and said, if it isn't connected, it looks like it is. And then we said, oh, what's creativity? And then, like I said, the bell rang. So some of these ones, and at one point you saw a lot of people were there, you could hardly see what was there. So I think if people put it up there, it's because it was really important, and I think we didn't have time to connect it because we are so excited.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
So, but it's my journey.
Yeah, I think, and just building on that a little bit more, I think the wins are the ones that were the most obvious. So I think by nature, if we had enough time, we would have connected everything, just because everything's got to be connected, right? Yeah. So I like to tie in through my strengths, because it forces you to focus on what is the most important. Because
that's
fun. And that's what I've been doing all along, right? I was pick one, do this. You got 5 minutes, right? Otherwise, different processes kick in.
Well, the other thing too is that last paper, if it was 4 inches higher and 4 inches to the right, none of those other strings would cross it. So we have to be careful with the line.
It's funny, eh? Okay, so let me get a photograph of this. And I had two more, but we'll do one more, and the last one will be homework. Yeah. You have to go to your own institutions and do it. So let me just get this, which has come out beautifully, I have to say.
Maybe while you're taking a picture, Stephen, can I make a comment?
Yeah.
I wanted to take a look again, revisit the reputation of CICAN or colleges or whatever. And so, and I think earlier you gave a good example of both, you know, the importance of a network. But to me, reputation is about brand. And your brand, your network is your brand. It's part of your brand, like whether it's your online factory, whatever. So I think it fits in there because of that. Because it is really important that, and that's what distinguishes Harvard from other institutions. That, you know, so yet we do want to be known, I think, for certain values and whatever, and that's our reputation. And I think that's what you've got to protect, because that's really your best currency, right? When we talked about that the other day with Ben O'Dowd, I mean, getting that big watch, one of these, you know, one of the big bombs drops, something happens that every president fears, and then all of a sudden, what's really at stake? Your reputation. I feel rude.
Sorry.
But anyway, so that's my interpretation of it.
The message is also, you don't want to be on this panel because you want to be part of the meeting force. You know, you want to be the Facebook. You don't want to be the trying to compete with Facebook 2 years later. So there's a role maybe for all of us to try to get in the momentum. You're trying to be more connected to the people in the like the men in our example with naval engineering.
Obsolete. All right. So this is the last little bit. And we don't have very much time. And so we'll do this relatively quickly. We only have 15 minutes left. And days of work. A lifetime of work, actually. So, but this is a bit of practicalness now. So our network's basically built. It encapsulizes where we're coming from and what we're trying to do and what's important. I think it's pretty good. I think it's a great picture, personally. But now there are tons of consultants and futurists and media reports and all of that throwing all of these new technologies at you. Personalization and predictive analytics, bots and automation, virtualization and distributed networks, from medium to environment, from content to field. That's a long discussion, but the idea here is what I was talking about earlier, where there isn't a common curriculum, you're not making everybody learn the same thing, but rather they're working in an environment and identifying what's important to them, and more, right? There's all kinds of things. Given all of that, how would we assess the relevance of these? Because this is, you know, you go back to your boards or your ministers or whatever, and, you know, they've been out on the golf course with an executive from, I don't know, Oracle or whatever, and they're saying, well, you know, you should be implementing predictive analytics right now in your college, right? Given that, the question is, does that statement make sense? So let me ask you as a group, what do you think?
Where is it going, and predictive analytics will say that
help us.
So actually, though, the comment was, you know, and I hadn't thought of it in this way, to use it, or as opposed to say to teach it or to offer it, it's a good point. This is also a mechanism for subject or discipline selection. Again, you know, especially, you know, I know employers didn't show up there in the end, but preparing people for the future, if that's what we're up to, the jobs that we're preparing them for need to exist in the future, right? So, yeah, no more truck driver training, maybe. All right. Even Walmart greeters are in trouble. Right?
No more accountants either.
No more accountants, yeah.
Maybe
So with only 15 minutes, we won't have this activity. That's fine. I think we've got a pretty good outcome there. But so we want to think about it. And the activity, what you would be doing in your head now is thinking about the trends and future trends as well. You know, if you're reading in, I don't know, a popular future magazine or whatever, you know, somebody says, this will be the next, Pokemon Go will be the next big thing. Remember Pokemon Go? Right, or fidget spinners today, right? So compare the trend against that actual environment, right? Because that's the reality we're working with. And that's a really important point, right? This is the reality that we're working with, or a rough, very rough approximation of the reality, right? No simple statements, no underlying principles, right? And what we've already seen is for, I don't know what, for 22 people, 22 points of view, looking at that very same thing, right? You know, your geography, your placement in the room gives you a different perspective as well as your background. So literally, you each see something different when you look at that. And that's the reality of the future. Right? We've always worked in the past on common underlying principles. That's what's changing. That's the map of the future, not four scenarios or whatever. I hate the four scenarios. Right? Well, yeah, it'll be one of these four. No. Won't even be a combination of the four. Could we see these trends, these things in the magazines, etc., as outcomes of that? Self-driving cars. Does that serve a need? Does it create a benefit? Now, why are we doing this?
So we can drink and drive.
There you go. That's a benefit. Yeah. Do they deliver? Right. And I was going to have you put the stickies up, right? You know, so you know, self-driving cars. Does it deliver on one of those things? Draw the connection, right? Or are they opposing what we've already identified? So again, and this is how you would continue, right? And this is how I at least work with the future. I have that structure, and I layer onto it, and I layer onto it, and I layer onto it. Each new experience, each new thing becomes something that's connected, or maybe breaks connections or shapes connections. And so every day, that network shifts a little bit. And every day I look at it and I ask, what are the patterns here? What am I seeing? And I know it's just my perception, but it's my perception of something that's out there that you know, is complex and interesting. So your assignment, should you choose to accept it, or if you're Tom Cruise, being a philosopher, you can do that, right? You know, add or anything, and the statement is true, right? It's still true. So, you know, this mouse is black, or ducks can fly. Oh, wait, that's a bad example. This mouse is black, or rocks are sentient beings. It's a true statement. Oh, I love philosophy. Okay, totally. So, your task. You will have to do this. I mean, whether you do it here, or I was going to get you to do it on those things, and we'd have a bunch of. But yeah, I guess that would have been an all-day thing. But so, process that I would take. Your mileage may vary, but first of all, defining the logic model, and the logic model basically is the linking together as we have with the strings of the different elements of our discussion: stakeholders, benefits, attractors, affordances, impact, and services. All right? And really, we should be able to go through this and draw, you know, from here to here to here to here to here to here, that's our logic model. Or maybe the whole thing is our logic model, and it's just a really complex model. But we're probably going to have to abstract from that, right? And this is how abstraction works, not by extrapolation, but by subtraction. So to abstract from this, remove whatever's not important, and you have your logic model. What's not important, that's up to you. Or it's up to your stakeholders, or it's up to new events or trends, etc. So that's the logic model. Then, and we haven't talked about this at all because that's most of your day job, right? What's the business model? How do you keep the whole enterprise afloat? So, and of course, the business model, as you know, is focused on the value. And the rest of this is the mechanism to produce that value, which is what produces your sustainability. This part, you know. Next part, again, you know, because it's part of your day job, what's the strategy? And this is what I was trying to get at a little bit with this process, right? How do we structure our institutions, or do we even have the institutions anymore? Does it make sense to think of you as 22 individual institutions or as one system? From the perspective of the student, does it make sense to think of different institutions or one system? What are the services? Define those. And then, of course, positioning, marketing, and all the rest of the stuff. Finally, what are the outcomes? Not just what did you produce, but what constitutes success, and how are you measuring that success? Again, whole other talk, right? So that's your homework. You will do it back in your office at home, and that's our presentation. That's the last slide.
I personally really, first of all, enjoyed the exercise, you know, thinking about this differently, but also enjoyed hearing your comments and your reflections on, you know, the deeper meaning of some of this in terms of how we're thinking, but also how it could affect our institutions if they exist in the future. I found that very fascinating, and it will change the way I look at some of our planning in the future at my college, so thank you very much for that. I think you've given us some very high-level things to think about in terms of, you know, it's almost like the products are a byproduct of where we need to go. It's how do we think about how we prepare for the future and even be the architects of our own future. So I found that very, very helpful myself. Did anybody have any comments or questions before we go for lunch, or are we good? We are going to take this a little bit further after lunch in terms of doing some open space reflection on our week. But I would like to thank you for coming all of this way and sharing your expertise with us. And I know your name will come up in the future as someone who's helped us along, and we may be calling on you again. So well, please join me in thanking you.
Yes, sorry.
And
then
we're
going to
get out a copy of the
so
the
should take it, the photo should be
the
back, should be the back.
Yes, you're right.
So,
you see
so
the
at this URL,
we take you back as
yes.
The
that's where the slides
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The photographs that I've taken also will be available.
So can you send it to me, at least? The URL is right there.
Yeah.
All right, Stephen, go have a picture back there, if you don't mind.
Pardon?
You want a picture
of
you back
there?
Oh, I see back there,
by the way.
Yes,
yeah.
That's
oh, of course.
Yeah.
not me.
That's last night, right? That band is from last night.
But it's amazing.
Yeah, 1 o'clock, Kane. So,
I live completely on one show.
We were to say that.
like a police have like that.
Yeah.
That's weird. I'm going to charge that. I'm going to go out together. Disrupted the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Changes.
You know, cycle like 2 kilometers down the road. Same street,
great.
No visitor center.
Oh, there are, hey, well, that's great.
More than 2,000.
Now, I better get that up here.
Oh, is that for me?
No, no, I,
oh,
here.
For...
That's,